Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Today we're going to have a conversation with Liz Duncanson, who is a physical therapist as well as a yoga therapist. And this conversation is very close to my heart. Many years ago, probably 10 years ago, I had an injury while doing Pilates class on the reformer where I tore my labrum in my left hip. And what followed, over the years was then a torn meniscus and so on and so forth, leading to a point about 8 years ago where I was having trouble walking for any amount of distance. I was sitting too much because I was getting in chronic pain and it really hurt to move. And I got to a place where I felt like I couldn't get the exercise I needed because I kept injuring myself. And it was a vicious circle. And I know a lot of people out there listening can relate to this. And I was going to physical therapy. I was doing the clamshells. I was doing all the exercises that they told me to do. And it wasn't helping. The muscles that had almost permanently, or so I thought, turned off were not turning back on. And if they did, they would go on for 10 minutes and then they would go back off again. And I could never get where I needed to go and move forward into a happy, healthy body again. So, as it turns out, I had to explore this on my own. I had to figure it out. I didn't have anybody like an integrative PT that was helping me. And, back then it wasn't as common as it is now. And so I came to, through trial and error, these ideas that so many of us have kind of figured out from the inside out. And now Liz Duncanson has written a beautiful book with over 900 references from the literature studies saying why it works. Why does doing your exercises with breath work, with mindful attention, with awareness, why does that make it so different? Why suddenly are we healing when before, when we were just whipping off our exercises while watching TV and paying no attention and not breathing properly, why did that not work? And so I have this really great appreciation for Liz taking the time to do this labor of love for all of us that have experienced this organically and been able to not been able to get the help that we've needed to heal ourselves. We have the motivation, we have the will, we have the desire to live again and be comfortable in our bodies. But a lot of people don't know all the different pieces of the puzzle and how it can come together. And so Liz has this very basic formula that includes all of it. Her four principles are alignment, sustainable core muscles, breathing, and awareness. And that all of those need to come together in order for us to heal. So she says that she wrote this book to teach other physical therapists how important this is. But I'm going to argue that all of us who might be interested in yoga therapy or yoga teacher training or even the general public, this is something we need to understand too. And I, for one, am so grateful. I wish I had had this book 10 years ago when I was going through my chronic pain and my struggles. It would have saved me so much time and energy, money, research to try to figure out how to heal myself. So, we're going to get into this with Liz Duncan from Oakland, California. And I think you'll enjoy this interview. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour and Beyond. If you'd like to support the Yoga Therapy Hour, please go to Patreon and join as someone who is willing to support us for as little as $3.99 a month. Each tier has some gifts that we'd like to give to you. So head on over to Patreon and support us if you can. Now let's get started and get right into our guest today. Welcome, Liz Duncanson. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Amy.
As we were just reminiscing, we worked really hard to get together. We're both busy women professionally and personally, and I'm so glad we're having this conversation. The book that you've written has a lot of personal meaning to me. It's called Cultivating a Sustainable Core. and a framework for integrating body, mind, and breath into musculoskeletal rehabilitation. So I kind of want to start from the top. And I was just looking at your website, and I'm going to pull this up for anyone who's watching this on YouTube, because I want them to see the Venn diagram. And I want to talk about it. You have a Venn diagram that has four circles. One of the circles is athletic training. Another one is strength and conditioning. Another one is physical therapy. And another one is yoga therapy. And then what's in the middle, where they all intersect, you say cultivating a sustainable core. So I want to know what cultivating a sustainable core means to you, but then I want to know a little bit about those four circles.
Absolutely. Well, actually, I'll talk about the four circles and how it comes into cultivating a sustainable core. Those four circles are my professional identity. I started off in high school and my undergraduate degrees in sports medicine and athletic training. And so from the get-go, I've been watching since high school, which was 30 years ago, I've been watching people move. And I was involved in theater and dance before all that. So that's one of the four professions. And then I went to physical therapy school and got that degree. And then while I was in physical therapy school, I was fortunate enough to be exposed to the strength and conditioning folks and took that exam and got that certification. And then along the way, yoga therapy became a profession as well. And that completed my circle. And now when I treat clients, I have to wear my physical therapy hat legally, but really I'm always combining all four of those professions. And that's where I came up with the title for the book, Cultivating a Sustainable Core. And the book is a result of what I basically tell all clients that come through. Four things. None of this is my own, you know, thought process, really. I mean, my thought process, but I'm always combining all four lenses. I'm always looking through all four lenses. Mm-hmm. And when people come to me with musculoskeletal issues, then it's all through all four lenses that I'm offering advice for them to help heal, because we need to make a living. I ask for a living wage and wear the physical therapy hat for the paperwork part of that, the business aspect, and the yoga therapy now blends perfectly with that. And that has evolved along the way.
So Liz, I think a lot of people understand athletic training and physical therapy and strength and conditioning, but what is it that yoga therapy adds to that? What does yoga therapy do that the rest of them either don't or you think is special about yoga therapy?
It gives me a framework to empower the clients to heal themselves and to take the responsibility for retraining their own thought process. It provides a framework for all the things that are missing in the Western medical world. It allows me to talk about the spiritual, to cut through the frontal lobe and the intellectual lens. I get clients come to me mostly by word of mouth. Some people find me online, but they all come to me once they've pretty much exhausted the Western offerings. And so the yoga therapy allows me to integrate, to be more of a healer, which I don't want to appropriate that word, but to offer a better healing space, which I haven't yet seen in the Western medical system in North America. But I know it's emerging, and yoga therapy is a part of that window where East and West and ancient and modern are coming together in healthcare.
So let me take some guesses of, you know, if we were to articulate what that missing piece is. Is it things like presence, like being present for yes. an hour? And maybe in a PT clinic, I know I've had so much PT, they'll show me the exercises. I'll be on a table with, you know, there's four or five tables in a row. They'll show me what to do. They'll run over and do some record keeping and there's nothing wrong with this, by the way, but they'll see another client. Then they'll come back and be like, are you ready for your next set? And so, to me, that's very different than what we're doing in yoga therapy, which is we're going to spend an hour maybe with someone or more and really be present to their body, mind, and breath and spirit.
Absolutely. You know, I've been working outside of the medical model since 2006, whatever that math works out to be. So I've been using a yoga therapy model before I was a yoga therapist. Mm-hmm. I've been a yoga practitioner throughout, and I would even say a movement practitioner since my youth. And so it allows the language and the framework to talk about what I'm already seeing and offering to the clients. Yes. And the presence.
So let's bring that back to sustainable core. And I know you have four kind of pillars that we're going to talk about, but are you saying that something like presence or whatever else it is you bring through yoga therapy actually is impacting someone to have a sustainable core?
Absolutely. So for example, like I'm always looking through all the lenses, and often one of those lenses is what attracts clients here. And so a generic example might be if someone's coming to me for personal training, there's always something going on with an injury or pain or something too, a discomfort symptom. So if they're coming to me, I want personal training, but I keep injuring my back, then I can watch through this lens with the time and take the time to point out to them, well, are you looking at your breath or what's going on with your breath? And yes, slowing down, because often they haven't had the opportunity to notice their own thoughts. And when we're on the mat and moving, and I notice that they're holding their breath or that they're straining or struggling, I have the opportunity then to stop them and say, hey, what was going on there? What were you thinking about? Was it stressful? You know, and then open up the conversation to them so that they can start to have this self-discovery, which I haven't seen time for in the gym or time for when in the medical model, when we're pressed for time to be reimbursed and have to charge for things here. It's the whole hour is working on the whole self. I guess to come back to answering the question, what does the yoga therapy lens offer? Is it offers a completely different setting to help them.
And it's so interesting because as yoga therapists who maybe are not licensed healthcare practitioners, they're all wanting the CPT codes and the licensure and all of this. But I see so many people that have gone through that formal education, become board certified, worked in clinics, done all the coding and billing saying, yeah, no thanks.
Right. And I believe it's the system, not the information. In both or in all four settings, really.
Yeah. All right. So let's go to these four pillars that you've kind of come up with that I think I'm hoping everyone in our audience can benefit from hearing about them, even if they don't have all the degrees that you have.
That's my hope. The audience for the book initially was honestly for my physical therapy colleagues. And there's some emotion that I'm resolving with this. Back in 2003 or 2004, I asked for reimbursement for some continuing education in yoga therapy, and they laughed at me. And they said, this isn't appropriate at all. But I already understood then as a yoga practitioner that I was helping the clients with their pain, with mindfulness and the breath, and that I wanted to study more because it was helping me in my personal life. Actually, I have 917 references to why yoga therapy is relevant in physical therapy and strength and conditioning and the other professions. And we've come a long way. And so the book, I didn't write it to become a famous author or to sell a bunch of things. In fact, I won't see a royalty check maybe ever, which is fine with me. But what I love is that I can pull out the book when I have a client in here and say, look at this picture right here. And this is what I'm talking about. If they have a predisposition or an aversion to some sort of spirituality, I can use it as a Western reference, even though my languaging is very yogic and that might sound poetic depending on how it lands on people.
So first of all, that's the best reason to write a book, to help your clients, to talk about your truth. I think that when I read this book, it has a certain potency to it. And I can tell that it comes from years of experience. I can tell it comes from your passion of wanting to help people understand what they're missing.
Yes. Thank you. I feel so seen and heard.
You're a therapist. Thank you.
Yay. Oh,
But has there been any pushback from your colleagues or maybe
not that I know of? Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's a wonderful thing because we do have a lot of occupational therapists, psychologists, PTs that I think feel like, you know, they've got the licensed medical degree or healthcare degree. Maybe they've taken a 200-hour teacher training, but there's still a whole nother layer on top of that that could be explored.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's go through these four pillars.
First thing I look at with my, you know, the superpowers at the end of Patanjali Sutras, I believe one of my superpowers that comes from watching people for over 30 years move is my X-ray vision as a movement therapist. So I'm always looking first at their bony alignment. And if their movements are hanging out at end range, or are they centered movements? Are they controlled or are they uncontrolled? And I can use alignment as a concrete structural way of helping them with posture. So in my mind, physical therapy, we say posture, and in yoga therapy, we say alignment. And in strength and conditioning, there's a test where we use a pole to find alignment. And can you do a lunge in that? And so just combining all of that to start there. And in somewhat of an order of depending on where the client is, I want to meet them where they are. And sometimes we just stick with alignment for a long time.
Okay. So I want to dig into this. In the olden days, it was all about alignment. Like alignment was everything. And then we moved over to this whole pain science model where people were like, no. The alignment isn't as important as the function. Are they able to do their daily activities? Are they comfortable? Are they having pain? That there's some people that do not look aligned, but have a very functional and comfortable life. And there's other people that look perfectly aligned and they have a very life full of discomfort and loss of function. So can we just take a brief moment to detour there?
Absolutely. And I mentioned this in the book that there are lots of people who like are running a marathon with, you know, they're a limp or whatever and have absolutely no symptoms. And that's great. Those aren't the people that are coming to see me also. So there's that kind of box that I'm working with people. And it's not the end all be all. I said it's in order just because that's often a concrete way to embody someone or to have someone feel their sense of where they are in space is their bones, more of the starting with from the Ayurvedic principles, more the kapha and their structure and their heaviness and finding that, because a lot of people come in the door just floating around and they're like, I don't know why I hurt and bumping into walls and whatnot. I was like, well, yeah. Let's just center and we start there. So it's alignment, even though I'm talking in the anatomy, physical therapy, bony alignment way, I'm also talking in a centered way. Are we embodied in our structure?
Yeah.
Most activities are not in neutral spine, and we need length and strength of all the muscles on either side of center, whether we're talking about the spine, the shoulder, any joint in the body. So it's just a starting point.
Yeah. The optimal state has a very unique opportunity for yoga teachers and yoga therapists who would like to do case studies with a group of colleagues and receive continuing education credits. Several times per year, we have groups that come together to do mental health case studies and physical health case studies, where we take time to go over the biomedical, the intake, you get into breakout rooms and discuss it with your colleagues. Then we come back and have you turn in homework that we will grade and get back to you and let you know if we agree with your reasoning or if maybe there's a place for us to give you some feedback. And then we'll come back and show you what our teachers from the Krishnamacharya Yoga Mandram have come up with as a solution to that case study. It's a wonderful group. We usually have about 15 to 20 colleagues coming together. It's the perfect way to get your continuing education credits, and we'd love to have you join us. So if you want more information, contact us at www.theoptimalstate.com, and we'll be sure to give you the information about how you can join our next group.
Yeah.
I mean, thinking for many, many years, I felt disembodied from one side of my body. One side felt very grounded and centered and heavy, and the other side was just like flailing in space and, like you say, running into things. And so I think that's even interesting to look at that embodiment. Is it equal on the top and bottom, left to right, front to back, you know?
Exactly. And so while I'm seeing, are they embodied, the languaging that often lands is coming back to that bony neutral spine.
Yeah, beautiful. All right, let's go to the second kind of pillar that you work with.
And this one is the densest and probably the chapter, the muscular core, that is the most academic and difficult to read. I use the biggest words in that chapter. And so I encourage people to not get bogged down in that, but to look at the pictures and look at the concepts. And that's some of the feedback I've been getting from clients is they're like, oh, that's what you're talking about. And it could reference it. So looking at the past in physical therapy and the structural rehabilitation sciences, they've been broken down into parts. We've got shoulder specialists and hip specialists and orthopedic surgeons that only do one thing. And the physical therapists have kind of learned to specialize in that too. Whereas I've been stepping away and looking at, okay, you're here for a shoulder injury. Well, what's going on with the whole body? And I find that no matter what they're in for, if it's a limb or a central, like a spine, bony, musculoskeletal injury, they are more successful when they start with the center of physical core. And so if we cut off our head, arms, and legs, we've got like a three-dimensional body left. So that's part of the alignment. And then what I'm looking at when people move is, are they moving through the center of this cylinder? Also, like I said, or are they hanging out at end range all the time of one of these? And when they're going from flexion to extension or left to right or rotation left to right, do they have equal availability and range, and do they have control? And the science under the control is coming from the coordination of the pelvic floor and muscles, the deep transverse abdominis core abdominal muscles, the coordination of those with the respiratory diaphragm, and the coordination of that with our glottis, our throat. And looking at the sequence and timing specifically of those core muscles, I'm calling those, I guess that's the one original thing in the book, is I'm calling those the sustainable core muscles, because they're endurance muscles, meaning that they are slow twitch muscles versus sprinter muscles, fast twitch, like the white meat, dark meat. They're the duck wings. So quick analogy, ducks have to fly a lot. So their wings are dark meat. They need more mitochondria, more oxygen to fly long distances. But like a chicken, it just needs a sprinter wing to kind of get up on the fence. And that's why their muscles are contain less mitochondria, and it's the white meat. Anyways, the core, the sustainable core, is more the endurance muscles. They're the duck, the dark meat, because they need to work all day long when we're not resting on the floor. So the muscular core and the sustainable core muscles are the pelvic floor, deep abdominal muscles, respiratory diaphragm, which gets its own chapter, the scapular stabilizers, and the throat. And the thing that these muscles all have in common is that in a healthy spine, they pre-contract before we move a limb. And so that was like mind-blowing when I was doing some continuing education. And I don't think that has come back into the athletic training world or the strength and conditioning world, but that is where the yoga, because of the breath, the diaphragm is part of that. That's where the yoga is already dealing with all of this.
Yes. Why is that important? The fact that they're pre-contracting. I mean, I have a couple questions about this. Is that your the motor cortex up in the mind, or the brain, I should say, is already kind of getting the movement started before there's actually movement?
There's preparation. There's a moment of preparation that we can train to become automatic. So that gets into some of the neurology of like a musician who has trained and trained and trained to their motor memory is automatic. It's an automatic motor memory that happens in a healthy spine. When you're watching an infant learn to walk, like that's the development of those muscles. They're the ones that come online then, and they stay online unless there's an injury. So to come to your question then, if there's an injury, whether it's perceived or real, the body then goes into fight or flight. And what I see is non-sustainable core muscles being overworked. And then when people come into the clinic, they're saying, oh, my neck hurts or my hip hurts. And the muscles that happen to be our accessory breathing muscles are the ones that kick in an emergency. And so this is where then we can downregulate the nervous system with the breath, and that we can feel those accessory breathing muscles relaxing as we work on the exhale and all of that good neuropain science that comes in.
I love this so much. I have a similar thing in our yoga therapy, the Optimal State Yoga Therapy training program called the Vital 10. And a lot of them are similar to the ones you're mentioning. And I always say that it's almost like when we get under stress, those are the ones that are maybe highly innervated with the sympathetic response. And therefore, I almost see people's core like being frozen and stuck and not functioning well. So
exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. So those emergency muscles tend to be more superficial. And if when they're staying contracted, then when we're in that fight or flight, we're not using our full range of motion of our diaphragm. And therefore, above and below and around, those muscles are just, they're offline. This is not the right way to say it, but
I love that.
They're offline. Yeah. They're not engaged. They're lapping in the wind or hypertonic.
Hypertonic, or like we're all sitting all day. So all the organs are getting compressed. All the musculature is not, you know, I have to remind myself to sit up straight again and use my core muscles. It just wants to kind of be floppy and
say, well, that's normal because it doesn't take as much energy at first to hang out on our ligaments. Like I have very low tone and this would be my go-to, right? But
me too.
I've learned that my body is really smart and it sends a signal to my brain pretty quickly. Now I'll get this sensation. It's not pain, but it's like this ache, a pre-ache that sends a signal. My body is saying, you know, this isn't cool. This isn't sustainable. This position, let's sit up straight, come to that center, relax the emergency muscles that were starting to kick in. I was starting to hold my breath and all those neck muscles and my hip flexor muscles were gripping. Now in this position, I can exhale before it becomes a problem. And so that's also some of the yoga therapy comes in, is the self-awareness, learning the self-awareness that actually pain is the signal of your body saying, yo, listen to me. And my job as a therapist is to help them change their movement patterns, just like a psychotherapist would be to change thought patterns. This is recognizing what may be harmful and then just choosing a place back to center to find the breath and then to have self-compassion and move from there.
I think especially for some people who have a little more neurodiversity too, their tone in general is less, their muscle tone. And I know there's days at the end of the day, I just have to lie down. Like I can't hold myself up anymore. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And these are all the things I learned through yoga therapy. It was years and years of watching and exploring, and I'm not like those people. And, you know, so this is fascinating to me that there's some similarities here. So I want to hear about your third pillar.
The third pillar is the breath. So when I'm watching the second pillar, the muscular core, often the gateway to talking about the third one is noticing that either the emergency breathing muscles are overactivated and or the respiratory diaphragm has stopped moving. So it's really common for the respiratory diaphragm to be acting as a core stabilizer. Mm-hmm. And so if our diaphragm is only breathing a little bit, well, that's sending a stress signal to the brain saying, hey, she's shallow breathing. Is there a saber-toothed tiger out there? And then it perpetuates this state. So them coming to the breath and then getting the diaphragm to move through its full excursion and range of motion is then a gateway into the nervous system and out of the fight or flight.
Absolutely. So is that something in your other trainings that they talked a lot about, or was that mentioned at all?
No, it's more in lately in continuing education. It's becoming more and more in the last 5 to 8 years been coming out, like the connection between the pelvic floor and the diaphragm. There's several courses on that and the breath for athletes and the diaphragm, and then as well as the glottis and the throat and the pelvic floor and how those are related. So that's been more recent.
Can you take a little tangent there? Because I've heard so many yoga therapy students asking that question. What's the connection between the glottis and the pelvic floor?
Yeah. Well, the connection is there are three diaphragms, the pelvic floor, the respiratory diaphragm, and then our glottis. And starting from the bottom up, and the pelvic floor is the bottom of that cylinder. So this is our respiratory diaphragm and this is our pelvis. When we inhale, our respiratory diaphragm flattens and then it pushes down on our intestines and abdominal organs and pelvic organs if we have them. And then the pelvic floor flattens a little bit or rebounds a little bit. It's subtle, but that's what happens in a healthy abdomen. And so there's a rhythm here when those are moving. That's the bottom of the cylinder. Now, when we're breathing, we can control that from the throat, from the opening here. So the muscles that make the Ujjayi sound that constrict the breath on the inhale, that's just what we call an eccentric restricted breath. So when we control the breath and restrict the throat, then that is how we can control the rate and pace of the respiratory diaphragm, and the pelvic diaphragm goes along for the ride.
Perfect.
Beautiful. Also, there's a direct fascial connection with the deep front line if you follow Tom Meyer's fascia lines.
So it's just a tiny bit about that, because I think, you know, this whole idea of fascia is so unexplored. We know so little. I mean, Tom knows a lot, obviously, but like that's a whole nother area of
Yes. I believe that fascia is, well, its definition is that it lines everything. And I believe that, and they're just now discovering this, that I think there's a fluid component in there. And I don't know, this is a Liz theory. I have an opinion. I have no idea if this is true or not. So if someone wants to go research this, this would be amazing. I think there's a connection between a podcast I just listened to last fall about interstitium. Mm. And I think there's fluid in our fascia. And I think it's in the fascia that communication is happening. And I believe that's probably where we're going to find that neurotransmitters are traveling. So I don't know. There's my...
I agree with you. And so what that ultimately means is like even our emotions are traveling through our fascia.
Yes, exactly.
It's so fascinating.
Right. And that could be that overlap. And I got this idea from that podcast that that's how energy lines, meridians work in acupressure, acupuncture, and traditional Chinese medicine. So that if there's a blockage, you know, there's energy, but maybe that's something that Western science could measure someday. So
absolutely. Yeah.
But we want our fascia to be pliable and supple. And so thinking of it like a fluffy thing we want to hydrate is nice and useful, I think.
Yeah. I like that fluffy. All right. What's our fourth pillar?
Mindfulness. So if we're unaware that we're holding our breath, if we're unaware that our shoulders are being worn as earrings all day, if we're unaware that we're hunched over all day, just becoming aware that there might be a connection to some of these factors to our chronic pain is a great start. And a lot of what I do is educate people on awareness and embodiment and compassion for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting because I feel in my own journey with finding a sustainable core and working through chronic pain and all the things you're talking about today, I think I was in denial. I had this image of myself as an athlete and I was in denial that I was sitting 8 hours a day at that computer. I was in denial that I wasn't moving enough. I was in denial of my chronic pain. Like for a long time, I just couldn't admit to myself it was as bad as it was. And so when we go to someone like you, and we're paying really great money, I hope, to have somebody say, look, your alignment is looking this way. I'm noticing your core muscles are, you know, moving, not moving, whatever. Your breath isn't moving. And I need you to pay more attention to this. Like, there's no denying that. We're essentially paying you to get us out of denial and start paying attention again.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where the yoga therapy comes in. Wasn't necessarily in some of the other trainings.
I think a lot of yoga therapists are looking at this and saying, well, is it going to be that PTs and OTs are going to really discover these miracles of the breath and the diaphragms, as you've talked about, and awareness and mindfulness, and just start doing all these CEs, integrating it into those professions? Do you think that is happening, is about to happen, will happen?
It absolutely is happening. And I've seen an OT, it's actually in their curriculum, as far as I understand. And I was fortunate enough to go to an osteopathic school, and they encouraged us. They paid for us to take Pilates. And I got reimbursed for my very first yoga DVD from Target from them. And so it is happening. And the seeds were planted long ago, and now they're finally starting to sprout and blossom. And I think there's enough to go both ways. I think that
talk about that, because so many therapists are really concerned about this. They're like, wait a minute, all of our great stuff is just going to go get integrated into licensed healthcare practitioners. And why will they still need us? What do you think?
Because everybody has their own personality. We all need to meet them where they are, how they want to learn. If I were so bold to say we all need yoga therapy, some people, they're not going to go to a yoga therapist to find it. Some people are. And so those people, yes, keep going to that. And once I have people discover it, I'll send you to the yoga therapist once they're medically stable and getting more control over their own situation. There are so many people in chronic pain that there is so much to go around. And I hope that PTs aren't worried that yoga therapists are going to take their job away. I mean, really, I think we can evolve together. And I think that's what it comes back to, the Venn diagram. There's room for all of this. And I think it's the gateway, the entry, how they get to that center.
I would even argue that there are people who don't like Western medicine, don't trust it, and therefore they don't want to go that route.
Exactly.
And a lot of the leaders in the field of yoga therapy are saying that to bring yoga therapy skills and tools and principles into the door through licensed healthcare practitioners is how we will introduce Western medicine to yoga therapy. And then that will swing back around as we get our national certification exam and some of these other pillars in place to become a true profession, that it's through the licensed healthcare practitioners that people will become aware of this profession of yoga therapy and start hiring them. Do you think that could happen?
In the system, the healthcare system, yes. I don't see the future of yoga therapy being in the system only. I think it needs both. And even though I'm trained in the system, I'm using like a massage therapy, yoga therapy business model to meld. And I think that yoga therapists can go the other way. And you don't need the medical licensing to help someone become aware of their breath. Yes, we need safety and consumer protection. And so it's about balancing the safety of the consumer and the knowledge. How do we get the knowledge out there? So I tend to be an optimist and think that both can exist.
And a lot of people say, especially like if someone visits athletic trainer or PT or something in the system, you might get 6 or 8 visits, but you're actually not ready to go out and be totally functional yet. And that there's a beautiful opening or window there where a yoga therapist would be super, super helpful.
Exactly. And that's sort of the bridge where I live. And I guess that's where I can see it going both ways, is them a bridge between the healthcare system and whatever goals that person has. And people tend to come to me because their goal might be yoga or some other movement therapy.
I'm glad you are optimistic about it. I think a lot of yoga therapists are wondering what the future holds and feeling anxious about it because so many PTs and integrative PTs and integrative OTs are really loving getting their CEs and other degrees. I mean, we have PTs and OTs in our program. You know, they've gone through the whole licensure for that. And they're like, I want to go through the whole yoga therapy program now.
I don't know. I guess I'm less optimistic about the system.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, just how, well, it's very personal in that right now my yoga in life is helping transition my mother, who has late stage dementia, from our home into a state run system, state paid for system. And there are no good options. And even though you can be educated in knowing exactly what this type of person needs, it's not available. So I don't know, it's a bigger job to change the system. So I still have some optimism that because there are yoga therapists working in the system and they are being seen and employed, that there's still some hope for the system to change. Meanwhile, to pay the bills, I had to jump out of the system.
Yeah. That's the whole irony is all the yoga therapists think they want to get into the system, but most of the people doing this kind of work that are in the system want out of the system.
Exactly.
Wow. Grass always looks greener, right?
Yes, exactly.
But you found your niche, you found your way forward, and you've written a book to let other PTs know that, hey, this is possible.
Absolutely. And yoga therapists, if they need to take that to the systems, this is legit. This is, you know, evidence-based.
And thank you for all of those references. It is really helpful to have, what did you say, 700?
900.
I mean, just that is worth getting this book, to have those references, because we can spend, I mean, I'm sure you spent years collecting those and getting them in the order to be readable and then in a beautiful bibliography. I mean, just that alone is a precious gift to all of us, I think. Thank you.
My pleasure. My gift to the world. Yes.
Yeah. Is there anything else about the book you'd like to tell us?
No. Just if you want a framework, go check it out and look at the pictures. My illustrator, Masha, she's amazing. So, yeah.
So it's Cultivating a Sustainable Core, a Framework Integrating Body, Mind, and Breath into Musculoskeletal Rehabilitation. So the book, they can find it. You have a couple of different websites. Mm-hmm. www.bodytempleonline.net is one of them. And then a second one is www.bodytemplept.com, as in physical therapist, bodytemplept.com. And I even find that really interesting, Liz, that you have put together two separate websites for two separate audiences so that you can speak to them in a language that they will understand. So the Body Temple PT is for PTs to look at, yes?
No, actually, Body Temple PT is for clients. It's my physical therapy practice. Okay. And it's actually a little bit of kind of logistics. This is my main business, and I see clients here in Oakland, California. But then when I upgraded my paperwork during the pandemic, when I went to telehealth, my lawyer said, oh, well, you can only practice physical therapy in the state of California. And I was already in the process of writing the book. And I was like, well, I want to sell the book everywhere. And I'm a yoga therapist everywhere. And I teach yoga therapy, continued education online, internationally. What do I do? And she said, you need to create a second business. Body Temple Online is yoga therapy, and it's international. And then Body Temple PT is for physical therapy.
Right.
But you can get the book on both.
All these complications, right?
Right. So that's why I was like, it's the system. Be careful. Grass is greener.
Grass is always greener. That is the message of today.
Yes.
All right. So this book is out. It's by Singing Dragon, one of our favorites. And where is the best place to purchase this book?
You can get it anywhere online. It's on Amazon, and you can get those links on my website and straight from the publisher, singingdragon.com or .us.com. They're in the UK, but they sell it in both places.
Well, thank you, Liz, for being with us today. As I said, this is something so close to so many of our hearts because we have been having musculoskeletal and core problems. I don't know about the other people listening, but it took a long time for me to find people that could help me fix them because it's more than just doing your clamshells. Like that.
Yep. Yep. Got to breathe during those clamshells and make sure you're actually using those external rotators. And guess what? That requires some core stability.
Exactly. And mental awareness and attention.
Exactly.
So, yes. Liz, well, we wish you well. We wish you and your mother well. We'll have her on our hearts and minds. I know that's it's such a hard stage of life that we're in now.
Yes.
Taking care of parents. So we'll be with you there.
Daughters. Thank you. And let's all change the system so that we can all care for each other the way we intend to. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you too. Thank you so much, Liz, for being a part of this revolution that's happening and caring so passionately about it. These are the reasons I got into being a kinesiology professor for 25 years and sports psychology and now yoga therapy. I do all of that because of this, because the integration of body, breath, and mind is so potent and so healing. So I thank you, Liz, for making such a beautiful offering to our community and helping us to understand that it's always hard to be a pioneer. And here you are just pushing forward and speaking your truth. And I appreciate it. I also want everyone out there to know that a lot of these principles we are teaching at the Optimal State Yoga Therapy Clinic on Monday nights. We take on a different topic every single month. And then we have four sessions on that topic where we practice the postures with mindful awareness and targeted attention and breath work and making sure the diaphragm is moving. We do a lot of that in a group setting on Monday nights. And then some of us stay after as a way to have continuing education and discuss what is the theory behind the experience we just had. So if you're interested in this, come to www.theoptimalstate.com and check us out and maybe join us on the Monday night yoga therapy clinics. All right, everybody, have a great day. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour and Beyond. If you've enjoyed this program, there's a few things you can do to help us. You can share this episode with colleagues, friends, and family. You can give us a great rating on the podcast platform that you listen to. You can support us on Patreon. And you can download the Optimal State mobile app and start using it to track your own nervous system. All of these things will help us to produce and give you the gift of the Yoga Therapy Hour for many years to come. Thank you, our listeners, for supporting us. A special thank you to our team here at Optimal State. We are truly a global family. George Mantuan, one of our executive producers. Adam Satchel, senior media producer and sound engineer from the Philippines. Krishna Panchal, a producer from Canada. Modupe Abdullahi, who does the show notes and is an editor for us from Nigeria. And Peter Morley, who wrote and produced the music for this show, who lives in Australia. Find more about Peter's work at www.zenmusic.biz. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.